listening to the Full English Breakfast Show in association with Air France, 106.5 Riviera Radio, and going live now to London to join Tom Rivers, who's the London correspondent for the ABC Radio Network. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning, Rob.
Too close to call, that's what we said, and that's what it looks like it's going to be.
It is boiling down to that, isn't it? You know, the pollsters have really, really been off mark. The GOP was correct. It looks like they're, for the most part, holding the South. So this thing all boils down to three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and it's going to take hours, really, to work through the weight of the ballots and also those mail-in ballots as well. As it stands right now, this minute, Trump is ahead in each of those states, but it's going to take time to get through those ballots, and the big urban areas, Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, Detroit in Michigan, have not fully counted yet. So that can sway the rural urban balance, if you will. So you're right. This thing is so close. It will really lie on those three states.
And the last time the European listeners probably heard Nebraska was on a Bruce Springsteen record, but so that could come into play.
Well, exactly. There's always a few wacky results out there, ones that aren't expected, but you're right. There are a few, but if you look at the map, 2016, you look at the map today, 2020, very, very few changes indeed, irregardless of what the pollsters have been saying now for months.
Yeah, I might have to interrupt you in a minute because President Trump is due to speak imminently, but somehow the polls got it wrong again.
That's a great question. You know, after 2016, a lot of the criticism was that the pollsters live and breathe and talk to their pals on the East Coast and the West Coast. And the big Midwest area, the big red area, the Trump area, was underrepresented in the polls. They said they were going to fix that. And if these results stand the way they're going right now, they haven't fixed it.
Of course, the voting system is a lot more complicated in the States than it is over here. What we're hearing is that these swing states such as Pennsylvania, Michigan and Wisconsin, where Trump is actually ahead in a couple of them at the moment, he could lose out to late counting of Democrat votes. How does that work?
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, the rural areas, the smaller polling areas, you know, they can get their results in pretty darn quick to the central tallying point. So that's not the issue. But the larger urban areas, they take more time. And traditionally, those larger areas are more leaning toward the Democrats, Joe Biden, this time around. So yeah, it can be like you can use the analogy of sports. It can be like a football game. It's to-ing and fro-ing. And we're probably, you know, 2 minutes from time right now. And it's a draw. And we'll see who's going to come out the victor. Somebody has to win.
Yeah, we spoke last week and you sort of played down the chances of this ending up before the Supreme Court. But the longer this vote wrangling goes on, the more likely that becomes.
Well, we'll see what the final results are in these three states. But you're right. There certainly is a possibility. If it's very, very close anyways, there can be an automatic recount to go over this. And then there are contentious issues. For example, states have different rules. If your ballot is stamped as if it was going through the postal system on the 3rd of November, but it doesn't arrive for 2 or 3 days later, they're still in some states counting that. Those kind of really minutiae, if you will, details will be worked out, and the courts may well have to decide on those kinds of issues. But yeah, you're right. It can get down literally. Think back to 2000 in Florida, down to one stack of ballots and each one gone over with a fine-tooth comb with both parties over there putting their 2 cents in. It's not going to be boring, but it could be very, very laborious. And this thing could stretch out potentially for a few more days.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Democrats have probably given up on Florida now because the networks have called out for Trump, and it's been a real thorn in their side, Florida, in recent times. Joe Biden spoke to his supporters in Delaware about an hour and a half ago. Tom, still sounding fairly confident.
Well, exactly. At this point, both of these candidates, it's not even putting on a front. Both of them have a legitimate shot of winning. Who knows? X number of hours down the road. So yeah, no one's going to give any sway at this stage. Both of them are saying, "Look, I've got a pretty good poker hand right now. I'm not folding. No way." So no blinking at this stage.
Yeah, the difference being, though, in this time around, whereas Al Gore conceded eventually in 2000 after that Supreme Court decision, the Democrats this time say they're not going to walk away.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So, again, it could go through, we could have a result, you know, in theory, weeks from now, based upon a court decision. But nobody wants that. But we'll see how close those numbers are. They're going to tighten up. As you say, Trump is ahead as of right now in states like Wisconsin, but some of the big areas going to be coming in. That's going to tighten those numbers up. What is going to be the final weighting, the final mix on those numbers? You and I don't know, but we do know it's going to be very close indeed.
It does look like Arizona, which has been called for Biden, could be decisive, doesn't it?
It could be. But again, of the three states we were talking about, if in fact Trump can take Pennsylvania, it's game over. He is reelected. He's got four more years. So, you know, from his standpoint, it would be nice to have Arizona. But at this stage, it really, really boils down to Pennsylvania.
One of the early interesting factors is the Latino votes, Tom, and it appears that President Trump may have won the battle for the support of a Latino population.
Exactly. You know, the Democrats thought that they had both the African-American and the Latino vote in their pocket. Not so. And again, it's something that, again, many scholars will look back upon this campaign and seeing if the Democrats, for example, could have, you know, worked their message a little differently. But again, we'll see. But yeah, Trump is actually, it looks like he's increasing his percentage of both of those quarters compared to 2016. So that's something the Democrats maybe had not thought about or kind of discounted, says it's not going to happen. Well, it is happening.
Well, we're still waiting for President Trump. The dais is up and everyone's waiting eagerly for him to come out and say what he's got to say. I see Twitter took down one of his tweets earlier this morning.
I didn't see that. What did it actually say?
Democrats are trying to steal the election.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, okay.
You can't vote after the polls have closed, but of course you can count the votes after the polls have closed,
yeah,
can't you?
Yeah, that and two bits will get you a cup of coffee. Right? He can say what he wants, but that's not gonna change the course of the ship. The course is set, and we'll see where it goes.
But he did say that there would be a red wave of voting on election day, and he barnstormed with the campaigning in the last few days of the election. So that's probably made a difference too.
Well, again, it's you know, he was so far down. If you want to read the polls going back for many weeks. And the close of the match, the game, the Republicans were much more active, much more out there, much larger rallies, much more extensive travel. That Biden, you know, basically stayed for the most part in Delaware, occasionally popped out. But again, he did not finish hard and strong. And that hence we are tightening up, and it is as close as it is right now. Paper thin, and we'll see what happens.
Yes, it's interesting to see what a lot of voters were preoccupied by, and the biggest factor was the economy. After that, one in five citing racial equality, but only one in six concerned about the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, exactly, and that was the big card being played by the Democrats, and the big card being played by the Republicans was the economy. And if you saw the big churn, the big turnover 4 years ago, where, you know, the blue-collar workers have been ignored, for the most part, for about 45 years in America, irregardless of Democrats and Republicans, in the White House. And Trump, you know, obviously sensed that and said, I'm going to do things different. I'm not going to be a politician. I'm going to come in and help you guys out. Now, has enough been done to retain those blue-collar, traditional Democratic votes, or have they looked at this and said, look, not much has changed, even under Trump. We're going to go back to our traditional roots. That is one of the big questions to be looking at in the coming days.
And it doesn't look like President Trump is going to grace us with his presence in the immediate future. So just a final couple of quick questions, Tom, because I know you're really busy. Mm-hmm. The race for the Senate doesn't look like it's going the Democrats' way at the moment.
No, well, at this stage, no. But they have certainly secured the lower house. So, you know, maybe business. If Trump can win, it's business as usual. If Biden wins, we've got a whole new chapter to write.
Yeah, and the House of Representatives looks as predicted as if it's going to stay with the Democrats.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, not much change in Congress.
Right, Tom, thank you very much. Thank you for your time. I'll let you go because President Trump hasn't appeared yet. Maybe he's having some of his hair done or something. So we'll let you get back to your duties for ABC and hopefully talk to you again soon.
All right, Rob, take care.
Riviera Radio. Business.
I won. No, I did.
Seems a little bit... Well, it's like, isn't it, a bit of a playground brawl breaking out.
Yeah. Have you been following it?
I have been following it. Listen, I don't find it as enjoyable to watch from a spectator perspective as a British general election, I have to say. I like the personalities, I like the counts, I like sort of people going to the constituencies, which you don't have in a presidential election in the United States. It's very much data-driven. I don't know what you watched, John. I kind of switched between CNN, Fox and NBC, but wasn't overly enthused by any of them, quite frankly. But it was, it's been an interesting night.
Well, it starts off with radio coverage on Radio 4 when I woke up in the middle of the night, and then I switched to LBC on the way to work, which was quite good, actually. And then I've been following it on CNN, BBC, and just some various different websites as well.
Yeah, certainly a dramatic night, of course, for US politics. Donald Trump, once again, as we've seen, confounding those pollsters. What will be the lessons learnt from this time? Said so much was learnt from 2016.
You say that every time. I mean, you know, Brexit, Donald Trump, yeah. You know, election outcomes. They've got it all wrong over about the last 5 years.
They really have. Much stronger performance than anticipated from the Donald. Hopes of an early knockout that we're talking about yesterday punch in terms of for Biden disappeared, as we know, as Florida stayed red. In some ways, I don't know about you, there's sort of this feeling that we were watching a remake of a movie that we already knew the plots from 2016, but it does, I have to say, feel somewhat different this time around. The results, I thought, were difficult to really project as the states came through. Huge turnout despite coronavirus. Republicans certainly got their base out. Mail-in absentee ballots certainly favouring the Democrats. Then Republicans out in force, certainly on polling day, swinging some of those states back into the red column. Where does it leave us? Well, certainly on a knife edge, as we've seen this morning, both candidates forecasting victory. Very different tone from each candidate. Biden, of course, saying America will decide. President Trump saying that he's won the election, will go to the Supreme Court, setting the backdrop, one would suspect, for a contested election, something markets have been fearing. The road to victory, I guess, comes down, as we were saying yesterday, actually. Remember, when we were previewing it yesterday, we were talking about Florida being the early state, that beyond that was around the Rust Belt, was Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, maybe we throw in Arizona into that as well, is where this is going to be won or lost. And that may take many hours, it may take, in fact, many days before we get a result.
Yeah, well, President Trump basically had called the election as a victory for the Republicans, you know, in his speech about 15 minutes ago, but he hasn't won yet. I mean, they're still a long way off getting their required 270 Electoral College votes. And the twist, you said there have been lots of twists and turns, so there could be a further twist, because apparently a lot of the remaining votes to be counted are Democrat votes, which is probably why once the votes counting stops.
Exactly. The scale of the victory or the loss was really going to be important around this concept of a contested election, a tight race, and it couldn't be much tighter than this. Was always going to revolve in or result in a legal battle playing out, and that's kind of where we feel we're finding ourselves this morning. There are some key dates in terms of the election process that I think will serve as a deadline in terms of disputes. Remember, the Electoral College delegation scheduled to meet on the 14th of December, deliver the official results by the 23rd of December so that Congress can ratify the vote on the 6th of January next year. The terms of the President and Vice President expire, of course, on the 20th of January next year. So you have to assume there will be a new President put in place. There's no doubt about that. This process will not go on for months and months.
Yeah, what are the markets making of it? As we said, they don't like uncertainty. And US futures shot up when Florida was called for Trump. But what's been happening since then?
It is. Paired some of those gains. It's been an interesting reaction from markets. So you could argue there has been some flow into safe havens. Treasuries have been rising. Dollar climbs up around about 0.5%. Swiss franc has been strong, certainly against the euro as well. Equity futures have been positive, as you said, but there have been pairing some of those gains. So we're looking looking at a very volatile session, no doubt about that. Around about 5 o'clock or so this morning, it looked like the FTSE was going to open significantly stronger. In fact, we're calling up 46 points. DAX over in Frankfurt up 29 points. CAC in Paris up 57 points. They've come in quite considerably in the last hour or so. And so is the S&P future. It's still positive, up around 0.6%. NASDAQ future up around about 2%. But certainly significantly lower than where we were earlier this morning.
Yeah, interesting. You should mention some of the swing states. I mean, Georgia is still in play. 90% counted, 51% for Trump, 49% for Biden. But nobody is prepared to call that one, yes, and that is worth 16 electoral votes.
President Trump is prepared to call that one, except, but I think we'll leave it to the media, we'll leave it to the officials to come through with that one. Yeah, there's some big states out there, significant numbers in play. So I think it's going to take some time to come through as we see the process play out. The other interesting element to watch out for is this idea that the blue wave has completely disappeared overnight. Senate. It's been much, much tighter than anticipated. 35 seats, remember, up for grabs there. Looks like Republicans are likely to maintain the majority there. And even if Biden does become president, that's going to impede upon the implementation, certainly of his domestic policy. What is that likely to mean? Well, probably less aggressive increases in taxes. So you could argue that's positive for equity markets. But on the other side, it's likely to be a less aggressive stimulus package put in place, which will disappoint some investors as well. House of Representatives looks like it's going to stay Democratic. So if President Trump is returned for a second term, he will have to deal, of course, with a difficult Congress, to say the least.
Yeah, although if the Republicans retain control of the Senate, that makes his job a lot easier. A lot of these states are really, really tightening up. I mean, Nevada, where Trump was leading for quite a long time this morning, has just swung into the blue zone with about 83% of votes counted. So it's not over by a long chalk. I mean, the final thing about this is it's mind-bogglingly difficult for Europeans to understand the American voting process and all the postal votes, people voting on the day, votes counted
In person, early voters, people on the day, say absentee ballots, mailed in ballots coming through. The sheer numbers have clearly overwhelmed many of the officials who were conducting the vote as well, and adding to the potential for legal recourse coming through. So, yeah, it's been interesting. You look at the numbers coming through. I don't know who did the best job of offering analysis on it, quite frankly. I thought CNN was very much data-driven. It wasn't great.
It was.
BBC,
it was really
Andrew
kind of
Neil,
dull.
You said, was a good man.
Andrew Neil and his swan song for the BBC before he moves on to head a new UK news channel. But he was smooth self.
Yes. He's good, isn't he? I like him. It just doesn't have the same drama in some ways. It's all really data-driven as opposed to, say, the UK elections, where you sort of see people standing there, they're delivering the count and they're delivering the result, and then they have to make a speech. I kind of like all that personal element, which I don't think you get in a US election.
The map's nice, though, isn't it, with all the different colours on it?
Well, they're going to great detail in each county. I remember watching Florida through the night, and it was quite amazing. We're talking about Miami-Dade County yesterday as an important element in the 2000 election. It was important, but not going the way of Biden in the rate that was required in order for him to win Florida. Then the Florida panhandle counties came in for President Trump. So all of that was quite dramatic and interesting to see. That Tallahassee, of course, where it's state capital, lots of government workers, unions there going for Biden. So interesting to see how some of those elements play out within individual states and, of course, across different states.
Okay, foreign exchanges, please.
Not too much reaction on markets. Dollar stay a little bit stronger. Pound against the dollar just below 130 this morning. Euro dollar coming at 116.5. €1, 11.5 cents for your British pound this morning.
No doubt we'll still be talking about it tomorrow morning. So thank you very much for the time being.
Have a good day.
Hank Potson, Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online. This is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Leister has the top stories across the Riviera.
France's Minister of Health, Olivier Véran, has expressed his anger to MPs in Parliament on Tuesday after the state of the health emergency in France was extended until December the 14th due to not enough LREM MPs being present during the debate. The vote was taken against government advice, which wanted an extension until mid-February. A Defence Council meeting is to be held this morning, which could see this decision reversed by the head of state. Speaking to the National Assembly, Olivier Véran said that a majority of MPs are not taking the current health crisis seriously, before adding that following visits to hospitals on Tuesday, he had seen a young 28-year-old man in a coma with nurses trying to desperately keep him alive and a second overweight 35-year-old man who was also in a critical condition. The minister concluded that while MPs were debating in Parliament, nurses and doctors were fighting and saving lives on the front line. There was further tension in the French Parliament on Tuesday as Prime Minister Jean Castex raised his voice and expressed anger that some elected officials called on mayors to violate the rules of the Republic by accepting orders to reopen small businesses which had been told to close during lockdown. During the session at the National Assembly, Castex said that when the Republic is faced with the most serious health crisis it has suffered in decades, we do not call on the mayors, servants of the Republic, to violate the laws of the Republic. It's just not possible. And there was further confusion on Tuesday after a government spokesperson, Gabriel Attal, declared on French television that Paris was to be put under curfew. The announcement was immediately denied by Matignon, with the Élysée confirming that this measure had not at all been decided at this stage and had only been suggested by the prefect of the police, concluding that a decision will be made in the next few days. Meanwhile, former French Prime Minister Jean-Pierre Raffarin has called for national union. Raffarin has criticised in particular the mayors who signed decrees authorising the opening of small shops, saying that of course he defends small businesses, but what we need is discipline. By no longer respecting the rules, we are no longer making a nation. He concluded that the situation is too serious and we must not attack the current head of state, as he doesn't know if another government would be able to do any better. And today we have to be united. Meanwhile, the latest figures published have seen a further 426 people die from COVID-19 in France in the last 24 hours. 3,878 patients are currently in intensive care, with 148 more beds occupied than the day before. The total number of people hospitalised stands at 26,265. That's 1,000 more than on Monday. In Monaco, 22 new cases were recorded on Tuesday, bringing the total number of residents affected by COVID-19 to 397. 13 are currently in hospital, 293 people have recovered since the beginning of the epidemic, and 89 residents are being cared for by the Home Monitoring Centre. The Maritime Prefect has issued a decree banning all pleasure boating and cruise ship stopovers. Due to the national lockdown currently in place in France, nautical leisure activities are forbidden in the Mediterranean. An exemption applies only to fishermen and transport workers. Students from the Val d'Argent High School in Le Muy in the Var have protested in front of the school gates against the lack of appropriate health measures. Tuesday saw students block the access to the establishment. Meanwhile, Paris also saw students and staff demonstrate on Tuesday, denouncing class sizes and canteen conditions in their establishments, which they say have barely been altered despite growing COVID-19 infections and the new lockdown. One exchange at a high school in northeast Paris saw police spraying tear gas on a group of students outside the school. An investigation has been opened after a party which took place in a private property in Draguignan in the Var saw several hundred people gather, despite France being under lockdown. Around 500 people, including two famous rappers and football players, are thought to have attended the private party, with partygoers paying €50 a ticket. The investigation is to determine who was behind the organisation of the event. Public parks, gardens and play areas in the city of Nice reopened on Tuesday. Access will be privileged for seniors on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays between 2pm and 4pm. And finally, police have appealed following the worrying disappearance of a hiker in the Sospel area. 48-year-old Anne-Laure Apicella from Valaris has not been seen since October the 20th after leaving for a hike in the Alpes Maritimes. Described as having green eyes and shoulder-length brown hair, she was last seen carrying a black backpack, wearing brown shoes, a brown trekking jacket and a pink sweater. Anyone with any information is invited to contact police in Sospel on 0493 040267.
Riviera Radio Sports News.
Football, no problems for the English teams playing in the European Champions League last night. With the details, here's more from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello from Colm Harrison at the BBC Sports Centre. Liverpool and Manchester City both enjoyed big wins in the Champions League on Tuesday. Diego Jota scored a hat-trick as Liverpool thrashed Atalanta in Italy. Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane also scored in a 5-0 victory. While Manchester City beat the Greek side Olympiakos 3-0 with goals from Ferran Torres, Gabriel Jesus and João Cancelo. The Chelsea forward Christian Pulisic will miss Wednesday's Champions League match against Rennes. He picked up a hamstring injury in the warm-up ahead of Saturday's game at Burnley, but a scan has revealed that it's not a serious injury. The Chelsea head coach Frank Lampard says a return to five substitutes for Premier League games is needed.
In normal seasons, normal times, I think it's demanding on a squad to play as regularly as we are, and now that's even tighter. So hence why I think a lot of managers now, particularly managers that are involved in Europe, are calling for more subs in the Premier League, because we know these demands can take the players to places where they're in a real injury risk.
Reports suggest that Paul Pogba could be arrested for Manchester United's Champions League game at Istanbul Başakşehir on Wednesday. Pogba was heavily criticised for conceding the penalty that led to Arsenal's winning goal in the Premier League on Sunday. But United manager Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been pleased overall with Pogba's recent performances.
Every player is frustrated and disappointed after a defeat, and we need consistency from every one of our players, and that's what we want. And Paul's been going through a difficult period with an injury last season, and the COVID now is working up to fitness, so I think we've seen plenty of positives lately.
For more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
5-0.
Yay!
Things are looking up.
They certainly are.
Hopefully Chelsea can echo that tonight against Rennes. In the English Championship last night, Brentford and Swansea drew 1-1. Bristol City 2-1 winners at Huddersfield. Norwich and Millwall drew 0-0. Sheffield Wednesday beat Bournemouth 1-0. Blackburn and Middlesbrough drew 0-0. And Cardiff beat Barnsley 3-0. Cricket, Ben Stokes has been named in England's T20 squad for the tour of South Africa. Stokes missed the second half of the international summer to be with his father, who's suffering with brain cancer. Now, the former Australia all-rounder Shane Watson's announced his retirement from all forms of cricket. Watson is 39, retired from international cricket in 2016, but has continued to play in various T20 leagues. And in cycling, Primoz Roglic put in a stunning time in the individual time trial in the Vuelta España as he took over the overall lead. Roglic now holds a 39-second advantage over Richard Carapaz in the overall standings, with Hugh Carthy of Great Britain in overall third, 47 seconds off the pace.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Oyster, the world's finest blue water sailing yachts. Oyster Yachts. Beyond expectation.
For coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Isle of Man, assuming the VAR, the general situation is weak high pressure, 1,023 millibars over the region. Winds are east northeasterly, force 2 to 4. The sea is slight, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint Jean Cap Ferrat, 1,022 millibars. And the outlook for Thursday, partially cloudy, force 3 to 4, northeasterly winds, slight seas, and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are southeasterly, force 2 to 4, the sea is slight, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,021 millibars. And the outlook for Thursday, clear skies, force 3 to 4, northeasterly winds, slight seas and good visibility.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Oyster, the world's finest blue water sailing yachts. Oyster Yachts, beyond expectation.
Riviera Radio, weather.
Unsettled today, really. Mainly cloudy, some showers around lunchtime and some sunny periods at times as well. Light to moderate easterly winds, a high of 19 degrees. Overnight lows 14 degrees with partially cloudy skies. Thursday and Friday, clear skies, highs of 19 to 20 degrees. Finally,
Brussels sprouts are now Britain's favourite green vegetable. Ooh. They've long been seen as the vegetable compared to Marmite, i.e. you either love them or you hate them. But more and more people seem to like Brussels sprouts and detest them, as they've been voted the nation's favourite green vegetable. They come out just ahead of broccoli, according to the survey. Sprouts were top, chosen by 27%, just 1% ahead of those choosing broccoli. Peas, I'm afraid, they lagged behind on just 17%.
Poor peas.
Much easier to predict than the US presidential. Sprouts proved to be more popular with men than with women. There you go.
Do you like sprouts?
Yeah, I do. I've grown to like them. They did say, of course, the people aged over 55 were
you
more
must
partial
cook
to
them.
to liking sprouts. And carrots were resoundingly number one.
I'm growing some Brussels sprouts.
Oh, nice.